Welcome to Mastering Agility. If you want to listen to authentic conversations with the most inspiring guests, find like-minded people in the Mastering Agility Discord community or both online and face-to-face events, this is the platform for you. Grab a drink, sit back, and join professional scrum trainers Sander Dorr, Jim Sammons, and their guests in an all-new episode.
Welcome, everyone, to a special, very, very special episode of Mastering Agility. My name's Jim Sammons. I'm one of your hosts, and I am joined with some very special guests today, who I'll let introduce themselves in a second. We're coming to you live from beautiful Southern Ohio, in between Cincinnati and Columbus, and we've got some in-person guests, and we're going to eat some crazy stuff. We're going to talk agility. We're going to talk Scrum. We're going to talk products. And who knows with this group where the conversation's going to go.
And we're going to cry.
And we're going to cry is what Sander said. There is a lot of fear at the table. So it is not a very, it's not psychological safety. It's like spice-ological safety. Why don't we go around the table and let everybody know who's here.
So I'm Gilly, or Gilly Goose on the Discord channel. I am wife to Jim and also a scrum master for a big clothing brand.
Hello, I'm Sabrina Love. I'm the product owner of Courser at scrum.org.
And anything else, I'm just the other part of the podcast.
So the idea I had was there is a very popular YouTube series called Hot Ones. And we are going to recreate that a little bit. We have some extremely spicy foods here, and we've got some drinks, and we may get milk, and who knows, maybe we'll go grab a garden hose in the yard if it gets really bad. But before we get started, I want to ask everybody, is there, if you had to sum up kind of the latest aha moment, the latest epiphany, the latest problem in your area, does anything come to mind that we want to talk about as we get ready to dig in and start eating some hot food?
I'm going to look at chief product owner here.
Chief product owner? That's not a role for accountability.
I know.
Well, I've been digging into viability a lot recently.
Viability? How?
You know the Venn diagram? That's overlaps with feasibility, desirability, and viability. I don't believe it's a Venn diagram. so that's kind of been my wormhole recently. I don't believe that you could have something be viable without also being feasible and desirable.
What's
the difference? Prove me wrong.
Yeah, what's the difference between feasible and viable?
Well,
you explain it to me in layman's terms.
I don't know. What are you thinking?
Feasible is, can you do it? Is it actually possible to build it? Viable to me is kind of the intersection between desirability and feasibility. Do people want it? Can you build it? And the intersection of that is a product that you can sell.
I wonder if feasible could be, given the budget and deadline we have, is it feasible? So is feasibility feasible in with a constraint in mind? And is viable meaning, like, if we think about if something is viable, I almost think, can it continue to live? Like, you know, I grew up near farms, and you would hear the old timers talk, well, that's not a viable calf, meaning even in the best case scenario, it's not going to live to maturity.
Right.
So I think that could be part of it.
For sure.
Feasible could mean, well, shit, you want me to build a fully featured product and you're giving me, you know, $10. That's not feasible. Or you're giving me 2 months to do it. That's not feasible. It could be viable, but not feasible. So I guess, again, I'm not saying I'm right. I'm curious if anybody else has any thoughts. What the hell's a product though?
Can of worms.
That's been the thing we've talked about a lot over the last couple days since, you know, we've had a number of road trips and just time to hang out around the fire or the couch. Is like, I think more and more people cannot answer what a product is.
No. Maybe that conundrum is a good start to pull open the first bag of.
Okay. So facilitator Gilly Goose. All right. We are going to start. I'm going to take a little bit of these. I'm going to pass the bag around. Everybody's going to take one or two.
Yeah. So for people who haven't followed the Discord discussion, There's a range of Schofield units that we have at our disposal here, starting at 8,000 Schofield units, going all the way up to 1.5 million.
Yeah, so we're starting with like your average thing. Let me throw it on camera just in case. So the very first one is Takis Fuego. These are everywhere here in the U.S., so I don't think they're a super big deal. So, all right.
And that interruption was by one of our friendliest wasps in the area.
Yes.
Did not sting.
If you can't tell, we're outdoors. So we've got some good solid Wi-Fi, a couple long power cables, and we are taking advantage of maybe the last really good week or two of Ohio weather.
It has been really great. Mm-hmm.
So as you're chewing on your first hot thing, I taught a product owner class last week, and a couple of the questions that came up, I want to offer to you and see how you would answer them. One of them was from a student there is a little bit of heat there. Okay. All right. Back of the tongue. She's in a big retail company, and she said, how do you get leadership to, you know, agree with, maybe that's not the best phrase, but agree with the idea of product ownership or product management, meaning having one person or even less people maybe have a product backlog? Because right now it's by committee in her company. So thoughts?
Where I'm working right now, when I first started, we had a by committee. Now my team supports 8 products, and having a committee for all 8 products is not just hectic, but just impossible. And we would not be able to please everyone. One of the first things that I did was make sure that each product backlog had one person that said yes or no, one definitive voice. Yeah. Yes, they could be committee in the background, but once in a meeting, we had one person to point to, because not only was the backlog visible, but we needed someone to be accountable.
So did that committee become more like a stakeholder management than?
Yes. Yeah. So they're a little bit more of a stakeholder management, but they also are able to swap in and out so that when someone is on PTO or in another meeting, they do delegate that yes or no abilities and approvals to that person. And I have yet to see that someone needs to come back and say, well, I know that so-and-so said yes in a meeting, but I actually need to pull that back.
Well, it's a very interesting part to start with, because where do you start with the delegation? Do you start with delegation, or do you want to make sure first that people understand what a product owner is all about? So if you want to delegate something, in this case, for instance, the decision-making authority, do you start with leadership? Do you start with bringing everyone aligned, making everyone aligned? How do you usually tackle that?
You know, normally I start by diagramming what are people currently doing right now. Like, I grab a marker, I go up to the whiteboard, and I say, what are you doing right now? Where does work come from? Where does work go? And what I'm also listening for and asking is, who's making decisions? And it doesn't take long. Normally it takes 20 minutes for somebody to say, well, we can't do that. And then as soon as I hear can't, I say, why can't you do it? And it could be a technical thing like feasibility. It could be, well, I'm not allowed to make that decision. And then we just start tearing that down. So I don't know if it's as binary as do you start with delegation or not first, but I would say that true initiating product owners are extremely rare in my experience. Most people are proxies or scribes, which is, if you've taken any scrum.org course, it's what I call a receiving product owner, meaning they're getting something from somebody else.
Yeah. Well, is that something that is happening out of fear of repercussions, or because that has grown the way it has and people are reluctant to start making decisions for themselves because they look up to management?
I don't know.
I feel like they can't.
Yeah,
I think sometimes it's what I call an invisible fence. Like they could do more. They could have more autonomy or authority if they took it. But because they don't take it, somebody else continues to tell them what to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What have you ever run into a situation where you had a product owner who tried to take more accountability and was shut down?
Oh yeah, all the time. And let me stop there. Yes. What's your next question?
Did that person end up staying, leaving, kind of accepting their situation?
Well,
was it even a bad situation, I guess?
I've never had it go terribly bad. I've never had anybody get fired or even suffer real punitive measurements from trying to take initiative. I've had them be told that's not your decision to make or that's not your place. And maybe they might have gotten their proverbial wrist slapped. But I've had many more examples of people said, oh, cool, you're stepping up. And it's one of those things where if people don't step forward, the status quo will continue. But when people step forward, there is an overwhelming response of, this is cool, this is fine, thank you. Okay.
Let's move on to the next spicy stuff.
Ooh, he's excited. All right, Miss Goose, what are we eating next?
We are now going to eat peanuts that are maple and sriracha flavored.
Sounds delicious.
These do sound delicious. Yes. Okay, nice. Give me a few. All right. Eating. I really hope it's not crunchy for the listeners. But, you know, I'm just trying to be a good steward and chew with my mouth closed.
And the other ones were definitely a lot more spicy than this one.
This one is that aftertaste.
Oh, I haven't gotten to an aftertaste yet.
Maybe these are a delayed heat.
Yeah, that delayed slow burn.
These are really good.
Yeah. They're good. But they're
these would be good on, like, if you chop them up and put them on ice cream or
in a salad
or on in Thai food or tacos.
It has a little kick at the end, but in the back of your tongue, but not as much as what the Takis did. Well, yeah, maybe that maple syrup really deadens it.
This is maybe that Shaquille guy's a puss. Like, I saw him on Hot Ones. He looked like a wuss. And he's like, I ain't going to make a face. I tell Charles, I ain't going to make a face. It's not my face.
You mean Shaquille O'Neal?
Yes.
Yeah.
He did one of my favorite episodes of Hot Ones. And he was acting all big and bad for like the first four. And then he turned into full on. I mean, I probably couldn't eat it either without making the faces, but he lost his will.
I think there was a little bet going on whether one of the girls would make it to the end or not.
Really?
Yeah.
Aubrey Plaza's episode was hilarious.
A little bit more to the mic.
So
something like that.
Man, that really, there is no kick. I kind of want to move on to the next one right away.
Let's do it.
All right, let's move on to the next one.
So this one is a sweet chipotle beef jerky.
Again, I don't think this is going to be anything.
Well, you got to start.
I'd give this to my dog. I'd give this to my dog.
I hope not. She doesn't like spicy. She vomits.
I didn't say she wouldn't vomit. I just said I'd give this to my dog.
About even with the last one, the peanuts.
Yeah. This is a big disappointment. But you know what? This could be the calm before the storm. There's a few other ones that are coming that I am legitimately nervous about.
I'm definitely scared for the last
one. I mean, so everyone knows, we are headed towards 1.5 million Scoville units, which is no slouch.
No, the Carolina Reaper stuff.
Yeah, I think for a while, the Carolina Reaper was the hottest pepper in the world. It's not anymore.
No. Until they started branding other stuff.
Yeah, and then science kicked in and you got hybrids and
people are always looking for something more extreme.
Oh yeah.
Yes. So here's another question as we're eating hot stuff. And wow, I am getting a little bit of my nose running. So all right, maybe there's a little something back there.
Got nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Ooh. those are big words. Big words coming from the East Coaster there.
Yeah, challenge accepted.
So one of the things we were talking about on a hike yesterday is the ability to turn off your work brain.
Yeah.
And Sunder was challenging me, like, why can't you turn your work brain off? And I tend to see work everywhere. Not in a bad way. I see analogies, metaphors, examples everywhere I go. Am I the only one at the table that's like that? Or does anybody have an example of that as well?
Yeah, definitely. When we've gone through museums and such, we might see something that another leader in a leader in history that's used something to really get their point across, or a new organizational skill, or something that has been valuable in the past, we might use it in the future in maybe a training or an explanation for a team or a class. Because when you can tie some of this knowledge and these frameworks back to how others have used it, it's a lot easier to digest and to remember.
Yeah. How about you two?
I struggle with turning off my work brain.
Is it a good thing or a bad thing?
That depends on your perspective.
No, it depends. I'm going to start charging people $1 every time they tell me it depends.
But it does.
It depends. When it starts encroaching on, you know, my home life or my family life, then yes, then I see it as a problem. If it's not, then no. I mean, when I get engrossed in something, I get fully engrossed in something.
Mm.
And it's kind of therapeutic.
Work is therapy. Okay.
So
a few weeks ago,
I was at a client site and I was running a workshop and I played the penny game, which is very, very common. Most of us have at this table have probably seen the penny game or something, and it's to just show basic flow. And once we finished the penny game, which went over really big because most of that room had never seen it before, we started talking about other examples of flow and looking at flow metrics in real life. And I use Chick-fil-A and Starbucks as my examples, because here in the US, those two things are extremely ubiquitous and well-known. And I got a text like 2 days later from one of the people in that on a Saturday and said, "Damn you, Jim, you've ruined Chick-fil-A. Every time I go to Chick-fil-A now or drive by one or sit in any drive-thru, I'm thinking about I'm now WHIP. And I'm wondering what my cycle time is." And I said, that's not a bad thing. And it's encouraged them to talk to their spouse about, like, here's a concept at work we're talking about.
Yeah. But circling back to the initial point that you can turn your work brain off, my point was that sometimes it's just good to not think about work or do something with it. I mean, you can have ideas, but to park them and work with them in an appropriate moment to give yourself some more mental rest.
Yeah.
That was more the point to that question.
Was that not getting burnout so that you can retain some creativity?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, we talked about burnout this weekend too. And one of the ways I combat burnout is having a lot of hobbies. And for me, my happy place is, I've said many times in this podcast, my happy place is the lawnmower. It's also the garage. It's the basement. It's the woods. So I can't stop observing. And right now I'm listening to the Rick Rubin book about creativity. And one of the points in one of the earlier chapters that I really liked is when he believes every human is creative.
Yeah.
But what he says is a lot of people, when they talk about observing things, what they're really doing is analyzing it. Like if you're analyzing a drive-through or a line that you're in about flow metrics, that is not likely to create creativity. Creativity is really about observing and just experiencing and being present. And then moving to analysis and saying, okay, what am I feeling? What am I looking at? What's the analogy here? And I am guilty of moving to analyzing too often. I think that's what I would say is it might be a win, Sundar, if I can turn my analyzing brain off on vacation in a few weeks and just observe and be present.
Yeah. How about you, ladies? How does it work for you? Because I can easily turn my mind off and I could go full flatline here for the rest of the episode.
Nope, can't do it. I can't even do it to sleep. So I am constantly thinking, if any of my team listen to this ever, then they will know this phrase that I use quite often is, does anyone have any shower thoughts? Because even in the shower, I'm having all these thoughts, and I will sometimes even have my phone or something close to the shower to make sure that I wrote it down to remember it, because I don't want to forget something that might have been an epiphany that was helpful with my team or another team. Or another scrum master at work. So, or even just how we use agility within our lives. Jim and I use our own Jira board at home to track some of our bigger projects. We use Post-its everywhere to try to figure out what our busy months are and what is a priority and what can drop. So, yeah, it never really turns off.
Well, usually showers are in showers, gym, bed. Don't mean you.
GYM.
Yeah, exactly. Those are the places where these creative thoughts pop up because
while you're not trying.
Yeah, exactly. Because yeah. Your thinking brain is it can shut down for a minute, and then all the other stuff can actually pop up.
But because you're doing so much creativity comes subconsciously or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know. So we're within eyeshot of my, which is not a word, by the way, earshot. I combine eyeshot and earshot of the garden. And every time I'm in the garden, I have a work thought. And mm-hmm. because I think, I don't know if it's a chicken and the egg. Like if I consult and coach and train in a way because of a previous thought I've had in the garden, or if I am more in tune to connecting garden and nature to work because I said it first at work, but like I was pulling weeds the other day and I'm like, you know, these weeds are kind of like having a shitty member of your team. And one of my clients has a member of one of their teams that I think is, I'm not going to go so far as to say toxic, but they are completely hindering the growth, enjoyment, satisfaction, and outcomes of everyone else. And I'm not an experienced gardener. I'm not a botanist or anything, but the reason you need to get weeds out of your garden is it takes nutrients away from the things you want to produce. And if you let certain things grow, you are actually stealing sunlight in some cases, nutrients, soil stuff from what you do want to grow. And standing there, I made the connection between what I'm doing with my hands on a Saturday and what I needed to talk to that leader about on a Monday. Now, if that's bad, I have yet to find a way. There's not a powerful enough liquor for me to not make that connection.
Well, I like the analogy, by the way, yeah. of weeds. Because yeah. one of the topics that we discuss about is that we talk about is the agile leader as a gardener. And this fits perfectly in. So I'm 100% going to steal this.
Yeah.
Should we steal more hot shit?
We should, because I'm hungry.
All right. Next thing is a Ohio product. We have our Grippos.
Ohio product.
Barbecue chips that actually are manufactured in a way to make sure that they have a spicy kick.
So they are formulated, and the how of the development of this product is to an outcome, which is to apparently make little girls scream with.
I love them. Right. I let them burn my mouth all right. week.
So let's see. I am so far very underwhelmed. So I'm hoping that this actually generates.
I'm all right with how things are going.
Yep. Yeah, I bet you are. So
I was expecting more of us to die.
Right now. Yeah. Yeah. You know, Ryan Brook wants one of us to lose. Yeah. Do you want to tell everyone what Ryan's proposed punishment is for the loser?
Let's start with definition of loser. So the DOL.
Okay, DOL. The doll?
Yeah, exactly.
Great. Doll. You're going to give somebody another DO thing.
Exactly. That would be the person who drops out first because of the heat.
Okay.
And what Ryan proposed for this DOL to do is to put a video out there of ourselves explaining safe and the merits of safe.
Yeah, not explaining safe, explaining the merits of safe. Is this going to be a quick video, like a short, like a YouTube short?
It's going to be just beginning and end. Like, there's nothing in between.
Straight face and a proponent of it, not,
yeah.
not sarcastic.
I call safe and their website a very, very valuable encyclopedia or dictionary or Wikipedia. There is a lot of great concepts and ideas in there, and I reference some of those pages and some of the ideas and the visual, all that, all the time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, okay. Oh, there's a little heat there for sure.
Yeah, but that it sugar, is, that they dust it with sugar, and it keeps you wanting more, but then you end up getting the heat, but then you want another chip with that sugar, and it It makes you keep eating until your mouth is on fire.
These are damn good. Grippos, if you want to sponsor this podcast, I'm going to go on the record as 50% of it and say, you know, call me. Like,
oh, yeah.
Call us. These are delicious. These are very, very good.
I get them all the time. You've never eaten them with me?
I don't think so.
Oh, man. I go through like a bag about once a week.
It feels like there's a powdered sugar on top of it.
Yeah, there's a little sugar on top to keep you kind of enticed.
So you asked me the other day about pineapple on pizza. So Sabrina, what are your thoughts about this whole salted sweet stuff? Like salted caramel, salted vanilla this, salted... What do you think of that?
I love a good savory sweet combo.
Yeah? Anybody else?
Listen, dude, I've been battling half of the Discord population on whether pineapple pizza is good or not. And there's... This is no discussion. It's good. It's
there's a
awesome.
Little bit of a discussion. It's I do pineapple on pizza if it's shitty pizza. I will not put pineapple on good pizza.
So
that's
this means that pineapple pizza lifts up every single pizza.
So if Sabrina comes to your house and you make her homemade pizza and she asks for pineapple, your pizza's shitty.
Yeah, it could be.
Nice. Very nice.
But how could it be shitty if she asks for it before she has it?
You can look at pizza and pretty much know if it's going to be like cardboard.
But that doesn't happen in the house there.
Yeah. Or if the cheese is very defined in every string, you're like, oh, is this not even real cheese? Is this vegan cheese?
Last time,
the American cheddar version. Like more of the...
You put American cheddar on pizza?
No, but if we're talking about fake pizza or fake fake cheese, that looks more like plastic.
Oh, it is plastic.
It is.
Yeah. I'm going to throw a shout out there for a cookbook. It's Kenji Lopez, I think, and it's called The Food Lab, and it's a really awesome cookbook. And what I love about it is he's got a science background, or at least approaches food from a molecular gastronomy level, and there's a chart in there about cheeses and about which ones melt good, which ones are good for different things and their melting point and all that. I found it really interesting because if I remember right, it's feta and halloumi cheese that almost don't melt. Mm-hmm. Like they almost do not melt, which is why you see them in really high temperature foods. And then there are other ones that melt really easily and they melt into a stringy pulley thing and... So it's up my game. And there's a thing in there about eggs. Like he takes eggs and takes a picture like every 20 or 30 seconds for 12 minutes and shows you what an egg looks like from 20 seconds to 12 minutes, I think it is.
In a boiled state.
In a boiled state. And it's like, if you want this type of egg, do this and this and this. It's for an over analytical person like me, it's a really good cookbook.
And it's visually appealing too. Because you get a picture of every single one of those eggs, and you're like, oh, if I want that, like, just after it's no longer runny for that yolk.
The other thing he does a lot is, if you don't have a $400 sous vide, that's fine. Here's how to make one for $40 with stuff you have in your garage. Or if you don't have this, here's how you do it. So I think it does a good mix of downskilling things to a way that are more approachable. I want more Grippos. Grippos, call us, for Christ's sake. Like, I'm going back for seconds.
I went back for thirds.
All right, there you go. Pass it around.
Good. They have that spicy kick with that sweetness that I just...
So while you were chewing, I got another question for you. And it's related to the previous one, which is, what's your thought on this idea of removing somebody from a team, and maybe not firing them, but just addition by subtraction, let's call it. Yeah. And... Our people like us, our role in that, whether it's a product owner, we have a product owner at the table, a scrum master at the table, and two people who I would say are trainers, coaches, consultants, and maybe have played all those roles over our career. So what do you think? Should we? Shouldn't we?
I'm going to look at you here.
Should we move people to a different team?
Like as a product owner. So let me ask it in a contextual way. Mm-hmm. Many product owners that I ask and talk to, they know who some people that might be underperforming are. They know people who might be hurting the team cohesiveness, but they're very hesitant to give up a resource, and I'm using resource in air quotes, because it's like, well, they're better than nothing. Like at least, even if they do one thing,
I disagree.
Better than... Yeah, okay, tell us about that. Tell us why you disagree.
I don't know if I can. Sometimes that one thing is not better than nothing.
No, I just to riff on that, James has a really good comment in the chat. He says it's better to have a hole in your team than a hole in your team.
Yes, I love that.
100% agree with that. Yeah. I've heard that before, actually. But yeah, I agree. It's sometimes that one thing actually causes more issues, lessens transparency in the team, is not helpful in any way, even though it may be well intentioned.
Yeah.
And to your other question, I guess sometimes there have been cases where I'm not actually a manager for the people on my team, you know, so it's sometimes not even my decision who's on my team.
Right. Do you get input though, if you were to bring it up to mm-hmm. others and say, look, you know, this is what we're experiencing. This is what we're feeling. This is what we're seeing on the team. And this is where I feel that it is headed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And honestly, most of those conversations start with my scrum master.
Yeah.
One of the, all right, before I can't answer my own question. Gilly, what do you think give us the scrum master opinion of this? Because I know you have a big team.
Yes.
And any team has people of different types with different capabilities. So what do you think?
Well, the last two places I've worked, I've had huge teams. And then I've had some smaller teams previously. But when I have these large teams, the scrum master seems to be a more pivotal position that I've experienced, that the openness and courage are very hard to get into a transparent moment like the daily or even refinement or the review. People do not want to air a grievance or an observation openly. So they come to me privately, they ask for one-on-one time, or they have asked me out to lunch. There's been, you know, multiple instances where they want to have a personal connection with me to make sure that they're not trying to like tattle or be rude or be vindictive or retaliate about something with another teammate. They really want to make sure that it's known that an ex member is maybe not performing to certain standards, or they're not showing up. They're not showing up to the daily. With how large my teams have been, it is, I can't take roll call. The daily would be roll call. That is it.
Yep.
So in multiple years now. So I can't just watch and take attendance. I have to rely on adults to be adults and accountable for their time, accountable for what they're presenting with the team. And if they have issues, be at the daily and get those answers, or at least ask for help and get answers later within the day. So I do come into contact where I have to help more senior management or leaders make a choice on, is this person right for the team? And let's talk to them first and see how can we make it more feasible for them to either join in on the daily, or are they just confused?
Let me ask a question about that. Something. Have you had instances where management, leadership, someone in some control of people has asked your opinion on a specific person?
Yes.
Okay. And as a scrum master, how do you handle that? Like, are you completely candid? Do you have to work to keep your personal biases out of it and keep it factual, or like just the facts, ma'am, only the facts? Like, how do you do that?
I keep it to the facts, but my first question always is if they're asking for something about a specific person and on my team, then I'm asking them to what regard. Like, what is the end point to this? Are they looking to downsize the team because of financial reasons and constraints? And who could we lose and is this person just a high salary that they want to see off? Because sometimes when you do the accounting that way and balance the team financially, if you take one person, that might be a high paying salary job, but if we actually lose two other people, the productivity might not change.
Yeah.
It's a balancing act, but I don't candidly just openly just talk about it. I want to make sure what the end goal of this information is, because I want to make sure that my team is protected. And when they divulge anything to me, especially like in the retrospective or on a one-on-one, that stays with me until it just certainly cannot. And if it's dire.
So I want to hear from you, Sundar, on this, but before, I want to give any listener a tip. And this is a tip I give to every scrum master I'm coaching. You are a member of the team. You are allowed to have an opinion about anything on that scrum team.
just because somebody might tell you you're a servant leader or whatever, first of all, the Scrum guides change to say you are a true leader.
Yeah.
And true leaders have to make hard decisions and they have to do the hard thing. The definition of discipline is doing something that, well, this is an oversimplified, but it may be doing the thing that needs done even when you don't want to do it. And that could be providing radically candid feedback about what you're asked. But the first way I advise Scrum Masters to answer that question when somebody outside the Scrum team comes to them and says, I want to talk to you about Mike or I want to talk to you about Sherry, say, okay, what are you going to do with this information and why are you asking? So if they say, is so-and-so a good developer? Are they pulling their weight? I say, why are you asking?
Yeah.
And I do struggle to I try and not ask why questions a lot, so I might form it in a different way, but that's what I'm trying to get at before I answer it. What do you think, Sunder?
I'm going to put it back because I don't think that we as Scrum Masters are, we don't have any decision-making authority whatsoever. So we can definitely have our opinion, but we don't make decisions on what to do with it. Mm-hmm. That is something for the entire team. So for all the developers as well. I would much rather have developers facilitate. Like, you guys, in the case that Gilly is the one who is kind of displaced with the rest of the team, you two, maybe in combination with me, we should have an opinion and the options to do with it. But there should always be someone who is sort of neutral so that it's not the entire team versus one.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking from a more of a psychological safety kind of angle, because those people will feel cornered. What do people do or animals when they're cornered? They're going to lash out. Then the shit's going to hit the fan really hard.
Yeah.
So I try to stay neutral as a Scrum Master, facilitate, but don't make any decisions or voice my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But that's me. I would much rather have the developers together with maybe the product owner that they have the conversation together where I facilitate than that I'm actively mm-hmm. part of the discussion, because then it feels like I'm going to rally the pitchforks and torches.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Go ahead.
I have seen it kind of play out that way where the Scrum Master ended up being a facilitator between two people who were having,
yes.
you know, a little bit of a tiff with each other.
Yeah.
And it kind of went like the Scrum Master would talk to one of them, talk to the other one, facilitate a group conversation between the three of them.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's very within bounds for what we want a Scrum Master to be accountable for is, and that's how they might help. That's how they might take action or actively do nothing is by facilitating other people solving their conflict.
Yeah, I've definitely been a mediator between like two parties or three or more. It just sometimes you just have to get a little time distance apart and then have a very distinctive this moment in time, this is what we're talking about.
Yeah.
One of the most common questions that I get, it comes up, I will go on record, it has came up in every PSM or PSM2 I've ever taught. How do you deal with removing X person from a team? Or what do you do when somebody is clearly not a good fit for the team? Or, you know, whatever. They're all different forms of that question. And there's no one answer, but it is, like Sunder said, we may not be able to unilaterally make a decision, but we are allowed to have an opinion. We are allowed to escalate when needed. I've been doing this long enough now where I think that I have had every single stance apply to a high conflict situation with a team, like thinking of the stances of a Scrum Master.
Yeah. You want to work together with HR, and from now on, I'm going to refer to HR as the people department. So that's what CBA has renamed it to, and I like that. Just people. Cool. Perfect. You work together with the people department to figure out what the company policy is, what to do with it. Can that person go in and work in a different team, or what are our options here?
Yeah. All right, Gilly, give us something hot to eat.
All right.
The only reason I'm getting hot is because of the temperature.
Yes. Yeah. The sun is blazing on us. It's climbing up to the 90s apparently today, and we already closed the pool, so it's a good thing we have multiple showers.
She's talking about. I smell delightful at any temperature.
You're not in the sun.
That's true. I am in the shade.
But you are the sun in the party.
The world does, or the earth revolves around.
What's about to conflict with our stomachs?
So we have something that is the favorite of Jim is a mango, but it's a mango habanera salsa. Heralding from Columbus, Ohio. You know, that's one of the spiciest capitals of the world, right?
Here's a little shop for you. The fact that it is titled Montezuma, that kind of
I felt like it was nice little
salsa with a dash of tangy lime. But as soon as I see mango, I'm in. Like my two or three favorite flavors in the world are mango and black cherry are the first two. Mm-hmm. Like,
I don't want to get my hopes up too much because all the other stuff so far was.
I'm going to make my chip and then I'm going to wait until everyone gets one and we'll all just pop this in at the same time. Because this is the first one from a number standpoint that really should hurt us.
Yeah, this
I'm really kind of stoked about the next one.
That's the next one.
The next one's the ghost pepper chip.
That's definitely going to hit.
All right, everybody ready?
Ready?
One, two, three.
It's good flavor.
Good flavor.
Oh, it's delicious.
Mm-hmm. So far, all I'm getting is sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe sweet. The habanero will.
It has a kick at the end.
It does have a kick at the end.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of a kick.
There's a kick that coats your.
I would go back from tongue.
Yeah.
I'll go back. But
all right, I'm going to take a second.
It's definitely the spiciest
one.
Thing we have had.
I'm going to give this one two tiny little high fives. Like, I got these. As I was looking for all the cables to make this, I found my two tiny little high fives.
Yeah.
I used to take these to a daily to give people golf claps, like the world's quietest golf clap.
Cute. Yeah.
Congratulations.
All right, I'm going to get a second one.
So I have a question.
Mm-hmm. All right, hit us.
So,
well, not literally. You're close enough to hit us.
Yeah, but. I'm not going to actually hit you. But this comes up quite often, I know, on many teams and in many of the training classes is the act of estimation and refinement.
Mm-hmm.
So my team currently, being that we are all pretty much remote, you have the choice to go into the office if you want. But I have had this issue with multiple teams is how to refine to story points. One of the issues, obviously, is people equating because we're people and humans. We want to do this. We want to take those story points and estimate them into hours or days and time. And that's just something that as a humanistic thing that we all want to do. But we need to make it on effort and complexity of the work. The tools that we have in front of us to use, since we are remote, it is harder to use them.
So what's the question?
So planning poker in person is great. I love it. But online sucks.
Not always.
Mastering Agility only works with organizations aligned with our values, and that's exactly why we are excited to work with our sponsor. Scrum Match is the free platform for professionals run by professionals. On Scrum Match, true Scrum Masters get hired by companies serious about their popular framework. The awesome people behind this platform have decades of experience, among them a professional Scrum trainer for Scrum.org. They have interviewed, trained, and coached hundreds of like-minded people, and they use this exact experience to make you stand out from the crowd and help you get in touch with companies looking for true Scrum Masters. So go to scrummatch.com and sprint to your dream job.
Go ahead.
Then if it sucks, don't do planning poker.
Yeah. So what are some other options for, you know, my team or other teams out there where they want some anonymity, baby, but wow, that actually is a little spicy. Any other options? Do you use mural and allow people to come in as guests so that they can have, you know, they can be an animal or something. Mm-hmm. But what are some other options that you found that work?
Actually, we haven't done any estimation or planning in terms of points in our team. Or
what? How the hell did you get anything done? How the hell could Scrum.org not estimate in story points? Are they trash? Are story points trash?
We end up doing, you know, refinement regularly. We don't call it refinement. It just kind of happens.
Mm-hmm.
We see each other at least once a week and there's always something to talk about. But we end up breaking things down. I don't know, maybe it's right sizing. Not intentional. We don't give a name to it. It just kind of happens. It's, you know, our backlog at the beginning of the sprint will look like here's a few PBIs and halfway through the sprint, there's, you know, 30 task cards in the sprint backlog, which I don't, you know, they create those while we're talking. And half the time I haven't read most of them, to be honest.
Right. Because you don't need to care, right?
Not at that level. No.
Now, do you trust the people doing the work?
Absolutely.
Of course. And I think that's critical. But here's my question. Since you don't estimate, are you able to set expectations with the people you need to set them with and deliver on those expectations most of the time?
So the one expectation that I gravitate towards always is the sprint goal. And I don't really go beyond that. Like, we look at the roadmap at Sprint Review sometimes, and we talk about what's coming next. Sometimes, most of the time, recently.
Mm-hmm.
But the only expectation, at least, that I talk with my stakeholders about most frequently is our sprint goal.
Okay.
And for a little bit of context, we have 4-week sprints. So it's, and I see my stakeholders 3 times a week, you know? So, right. So they get sick of hearing it to some extent.
Mm-hmm. So if you, do you have 12 sprint goals a year then?
Sure.
So what do you, there's a lot in that answer. She's given me that answer many times over the years.
Sure, this is almost a passive aggressive version of it depends.
It is. Yes. Maybe I need to start charging for sure. So it depends is a dollar, but sure is 50 cents.
Sure.
Let's go with that.
Ding, 50 cents.
You're going to be a millionaire by the time that we hit our plane tomorrow.
I know I am. That's good. I got to pay off this big ass place. So,
Just coming back to the Scrum Guide, which is the most cringy thing to say.
We can say it.
You know,
it is
that's going to be 25 cents. But the only reason the estimation should take place is so that we can get items ready to drag into a sprint, right?
Are you going
to
open the definition of ready can of worms?
No.
Okay. Keep going. No, let's not.
If you want a spicy topic, let's do that. No, but if you would ask your developers, like, can we do this in the sprint? And you would just have 3 items in there. Mm-hmm. They have not had an estimate number or a t-shirt size or whatever. Mm-hmm. Can we do this in the sprint? Yeah? Okay, cool. That's it. Then you have your estimate, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be that hard or complicated.
No. And when you work in a smaller team or a smaller company that everyone can really visibly see that people are working and getting stuff done, that's one answer. But many of the companies I've worked for are so large, they need some type of metric to say, okay, how are we hitting that sprint goal? Oh, we're hitting that sprint goal by completing 100-something story points. Mm-hmm. Or we completed 2 XL features. So they really drive their comfort level to know that the team is, you know, working and accomplishing something and not then inserting themselves where they really don't need to be.
And this is like, this is one of the areas where I do have a firm opinion on the chicken and the egg here. Like, if you had to, so if I have leadership who wants to push estimations so that they can get these metrics and measurements that they need to govern by, if you have a sprint goal and product goals and can set expectations, I think you should start there and they will stop caring almost immediately about points. But in lieu of that, they need something. And we could argue the merits of it if any type of estimation is telling them what they think it is anyway. But when I've been able to get teams to start using sprint goals and product goals and being able to describe, this is where we're headed right now, and this is where we think we're going next, the conversations with stakeholders who used to say, I want to see X points per developer, and I want to know how many hours is in a point, those have stopped. And they haven't stopped because somebody's made them stop. They've stopped because they love that now they know what they're getting and they don't have to care as much about, is it a 35 or is it a 22? And is Mikey doing a 7 and Sunder's doing an 11 or whatever? They still do come around and ask those things for like quarterly review time or annual review time. And I quickly deflect that and say, those aren't good measures of effectiveness anyway. But yeah. Go ahead.
So yeah, our conversations, there's another side of that actually with the stakeholders that I didn't mention earlier. It's, you know, for this, our sprint goal in 4 weeks and we know what it will cost us.
Mm-hmm.
And is it worth it? And it's more about the sprint goal than it is about the people. We could do it with 5 people, 6 people. Honestly, it doesn't matter. They want to know that what they're getting is worth what we're spending to get it.
Now, tell us what you mean by we know what it will cost us, because that is an awesome sentence.
Sure. How much our sprint will cost us?
Dollars and cents? Time? What are you talking about? What's the measurement?
Both, I suppose. Yeah, actually, because my team right now is contractors, right? Mm-hmm. So it's very easy to track. We have, you know, their contracts are hours per month and at a set rate, and whatever they need. In some cases, I tell them, you know, they can go beyond that if the sprint goal is that important. Or in some cases, no, it's not that important and we're going to cap it.
Yeah.
So there's always that kind of discussion with stakeholders.
Have you ever had a time where a stakeholder has came, let's say you hit the sprinkle, you did exactly what was needed, what was agreed, the stakeholders are happy, but they said, you know, because we know what that cost us, it was not a good thing. We should not have done that. Like the juice was not worth the proverbial squeeze.
Sure.
How, and
that's an opportunity to pivot. I mean, so, mm-hmm. so that's actually related to, we did have a product, that we were working on last year, where we made it through four or five sprints, I think, and then mm-hmm. decided, you know, we're going to pause. We don't know if we're really getting what we want to out of it. So we're going to pause and see what the response is, so far. And then, you know, gave it, I don't know, 4 or 5 months,
probably, yeah.
4 or 5 sprints, I guess, to see what the response was, see how it was landing with our channel, with our stakeholders. And ultimately at the end of that, we decided to defund the project.
Okay.
So,
and you know, this isn't exactly fair to Sabrina because, many of us and many of the listeners may, you know, be able to connect some dots here, but just speaking mm-hmm. conceptually mm-hmm. or in your experience, when the return was not worth the investment,
yeah.
how did you as a product owner feel, and did the stakeholders bear accountability for that? Did you, or what, how did that
sure.
help or hurt your relationship with stakeholders?
I think it strengthened it, honestly. It's because we made the decision together
mm-hmm.
and it was a shared conversation that we continued to have together. Like they wanted to know what the response was from our channel, which was our first point of desirability and feasibility. It's, can our channel deliver it? Will they deliver it?
Mm-hmm.
If they won't deliver it, then we have a different problem.
Mm-hmm.
So it was always, it was kind of an ongoing conversation between me and stakeholders and the team. About what's happening with this thing. We know what we want. We know what our vision is. And are we realizing it? And slowly we kind of figured out together that we kind of weren't.
Yeah. So can, will, and should are three of the things that I use for sprint goals. So mm-hmm. it kind of goes back to what you started with, the Venn diagram of feasibility and viability and all that is like,
that's not real.
That's not real. Like, can we is a skill based or a subject matter expertise conversation, maybe. Should we is, that's what the product owner's accountability is like, where are we headed and is it based on value? But will we starts immediately after sprint planning in my, or even before, yeah. like it may start before we leave and quote unquote start the sprint. But it's something that just today I asked a team, are we going to hit our sprint goal? Because you all said at the beginning, it was a realistic, feasible, and valuable sprint goal. And as times went on, my anxiety about if they're going to hit it or not has been increasing. And their answers are changing. But I think can, will, and should are really good things to keep in mind with sprint goals.
I have a question for you.
Do it. Thunder. Hit it.
And Gilly. Have you ever changed a sprint goal in the middle of a sprint because you've discovered that it was not at all where you want to be going?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes and no. That's hard.
It
because
depends.
It's not that
you
it
say
depends.
It depends. You
no,
owe $1.
No, it doesn't depend. It was the one time when I had just joined a team and I found out they had multiple sprint goals. And they were all just to deliver value.
Yeah.
So, yes, we changed them mid, but it was because it was a learning moment for them all to understand that what the sprint goal really entailed and what the purpose of it was.
Now, someone may revoke my PSD card because I don't know if I would say that in the cases where we have modified a sprint goal, if it was rendered obsolete and we canceled the sprint and put all the crap back on the backlog, replan, all the, okay. But what I would say is we modified a sprint goal in a few cases to be more robust, more mm-hmm. ambitious. And in some times we realized that something that was not feasible or realistic came out of the sprint goal. But the focus of the sprint stayed the same.
Yeah.
But it could be argued we moved the goalposts a little bit.
Yeah.
And this is, yeah. What do you...
No, so shall we take the...
Yeah, we should
that
we also got milk this time.
We have milk in front of us, which is how you know this show is getting...
touch anything.
It's getting legit. Don't touch your eyes. We are doing the one chip challenge. These things are...
855,000 to 1 million Scoville units.
What are the rules here? Do we take a nibble or the whole chip?
I'm popping the whole chip. Like, once you pop, you can't stop, right? Is that a chip
thing? He's the one without real milk, so he's really challenging himself.
Yeah, I don't have lactose. I hope lactose isn't the thing. Yeah. All right. Cheers.
Cheers.
I'm not feeling anything.
Not yet.
It's kind of tasty.
It's coming.
I'm sure it's coming.
Was it the spiciness or the powder it's that you're
dry. I think it's the powder.
The powder got in the back of my throat and is making me like tickle, but oh. It's just a dry chip, it feels like.
That's there.
Mm. It's there, but.
Yeah. I mean.
I'm not going to say I'm going to eat a bag of these, but.
Like, yeah. Oh, I the lip. I was gonna need milk for this.
There it comes.
Oh, my lips are hot.
Yes, they are.
Mm, it's like in Arizona. It's a dry heat. No, it's living in an oven is what Phoenix is like.
Yeah. No, I just got dust.
Mm.
I didn't get the dust.
The dust just bothered the back of my throat, but
I got
the spice isn't
there. I think I got all your dust.
Yeah. Mm. Mine hit too. Well.
I thought that was going to be way scarier.
Me too.
Yeah.
Here, maybe try a second one.
No.
Oh.
All right.
Mm. We're okay with that. We still have another hot thing coming.
The scary one. The actually scary one. Maybe.
So one of the things Sabrina's talking about is, and again, it doesn't surprise me that she's doing this and it's normal because I would hope it is based on what you do and where you work. Hmm. Product owners have got to know what a sprint costs them.
Yeah.
And every single PSPO I teach, every PSPOA, just every client I have, I don't care what they're doing. If they're doing Scrum or something else, I'm like, what does this cost you? We're in business to deliver value, to make money, to be profitable or whatever. And if you don't know what things cost you, I don't know how you can say that you're making good data-driven decisions.
And equally, what does it get you? And it doesn't have to be value. It could be enablers, new opportunities, limitation of risk. What does it get you?
Yeah.
Because then you can make a justified or a little bit balanced decision on cost versus what it delivers.
Yeah, I have a couple teams, right? And cost, they cost different amounts and they're working on different things. One of them is building products or maintaining products. And the other one is enabling our channel to deliver those new products. So they're not actually delivering something tangible. They're helping our channel adopt new or improved evolved products.
Yeah.
Right?
So you can't really measure the
value
the same.
Different.
Well, but they can measure. Like one thing I will say as one of Sabrina's constituents and customers and users is I feel like you solicit feedback in a variety of ways over the years. So I think you might not be able to immediately like release something and within a week know if it's delivered positive ROI, but you are using data to say, hey, we did this. We thought the value was X and none of you have sold it in 6 months. So regardless of what we thought, you know.
No, it's more of like you can't hold team A accountable for what team B usually gets the results for. Like you wouldn't want to measure them equally.
Mm-mm. Well,
their own measures of what their success and value are.
They are definitely measured differently.
Yeah.
Although they do talk to each other quite frequently, because they're one is maintaining and building courses, right? Yeah. And the other team is helping the PST community to deliver those courses.
Yeah.
So they do talk frequently, but they're what we measure and what is important to those teams, I guess, is quite different.
Well, Sundar, you probably know the Scrum guide more by rote memorization than I do. Maybe. What does it say, if anything, from a developer's accountability to value? Because I know that as they're a member of the Scrum team is obviously held to certain things, but.
The Scrum guy doesn't talk about value when it comes to the developer specifically, because the whole team is accountable for value. And I think that's the whole reason why they kept it specifically as a developer.
Do I win if I take a second?
No,
sure.
Please take
extra
a second one.
Because Sabrina is taking a second.
Notice the biggest wuss is going back for seconds of the hottest thing so far.
Yeah, she's doing well. But what it says with the developers is they're talking about that they are accountable for instilling quality, not necessarily to deliver value. They are, the whole team is accountable for creating a done increment, which is the valuable part, where every one of the accountabilities plays a vital role.
But, and this is the weird thing, is I've talked to, so a done increment should be valuable, yeah. But if it's not, if we find out later that it's not, should the developers feel bad that their work was found and not be valuable? Or should we know the product owner is accountable?
Well, did you have a feeling it wouldn't be valuable going into it, or was it a surprise? Like, something happened that you just weren't expecting at all.
Was it a result of the empirical approach?
Yeah. If it was the result of empiricism and you fully believed in the approach that you were taking and you fully, what you knew at the time, you made the best decision that you could with the knowledge that you had at the time, then that's why we do sprints, right? So that it's a short feedback loop and you can make a decision sooner than getting to this point, the same situation, maybe a year down the road.
Yeah.
And then you've wasted a year as opposed to wasted in quotes, a sprint.
Yeah, there's short investments.
So I have mixed feelings about this, and it comes up a lot. And I've told some developers who maybe have registered their belief that something they're doing is not going to be valuable, but the product owner or whoever is making those decisions has said, I don't care, do it anyway.
Sure.
There's a very popular show on TV called The Bear. And think about a restaurant. You don't even need to know the show to understand this analogy. And this is another example of what Sunder is telling me to turn my brain off and stop analyzing things. But there's a head chef in the kitchen, and then there's a bunch of sous chefs who are cooking the dishes. But the head chef is accountable for the overall quality, the love of the customers, and all that. Now, if a sous chef on that show tastes a dish, whether or not it's they designed it, whether or not it's the way they would have made it, and it sucks, they're like, chef, come try this. And he walks over, he grabs a spoon, he's like, that's shit, like add more salt or do this or 86 it, I think, right? Like take that off the menu. I think that's good. That is a developer saying, hey, Sabrina, I don't think as I'm doing this that it's at the quality, or even maybe the quality is fine. It's not going to hurt anybody, but maybe the value is not going to be there. But then if I think about a more manufacturing focused thing.
What's the Toyota pull the cord?
Exactly. Right? So that's where I was going, is it's an and-on cord. But when somebody is pulling a cord in a factory to stop the line, it's really about defects. But What if you have a Chevy Nova or a Gremlin rolling down the line? Like, is somebody going to be like, hey, this car is a piece of crap? No. So I think it's weird, right? But we deal with knowledge workers. So yeah. It's not fair to use a widget or manufacturing based metaphor.
No, it could just as well be that the stakeholders have not been sufficiently involved, or they deliberately were distancing themselves, and therefore the Scrum team is just shooting hoops.
It's a transparency issue.
Yeah. So maybe they have delivered something that's not of value, but not because of the Scrum team that they were incapable to do it, but because the missing connection with stakeholders. So you cannot put that back into the Scrum team or the developers for that matter. Speaking of development, so we deliver more.
Yes, and I have a hot take, a hot question on hot ones. Agile Edition from James and Chad. So let's get this going, and then I'm going to ask you arguably one of the most difficult questions.
It depends. So if I answer it.
Always dollar. Depends.
You're up to like $11.
So this is now the Carolina Reaper Salsa. This we got from Jungle Gyms to also support local communities here in Ohio. So if you have not been to Jungle Gyms, you should go. You are close.
1.5 million
or ever in the area of the Cincinnati
Schofield scale. I am going
suburbs,
to
suburbs, either north or east.
You're going to need more milk.
So we are big fans of Jungle Gyms. There's something there for everybody. They have a killer podcast studio in there. Maybe like Jungle Gyms, you want us to come do Mastering Agility from the store? That would be amazing. Like over in the Netherlands, you got any grocery stores with podcast studios in the middle of them?
No,
I didn't think so. Come on, Albert Heijn. Come on, Albert Heijn.
That's the niche.
I have legitimately dipped here.
Setting the bar.
So James, we're getting to your question here in a second after we ingest this.
No, I'm kidding. Yeah, I might.
Oh, everyone's just kind of like lightly running. So far,
my nose is still running from the ghost pepper
mine
chip.
Is too. Mine is running. I'm getting another tissue.
Yeah.
Maybe we should do this by who used the most tissues throughout this challenge.
No, don't stop moving the goalposts.
Then we won't.
No changing the sprint goal.
I'm the one that used the most. So.
On three, cheers.
Cheers.
The initial taste is like tomato soup.
It's very tomatoey. Yeah.
Well, the last one started light and carried a big stick at the end, so I'm not going to get cocky yet.
No.
Maybe we should have stirred it.
Maybe.
You think it could have settled to the bottom?
Here, someone want to shake it?
Okay, so as we're shaking this and getting this going, James's question is, have you seen that Ken Schwaber has canvassed for public opinion on future improvements to the Scrum Guide? So I opened the blog or the article here. And basically it says, if you have something that you feel should be corrected, added, removed, changed, or that you're confused or angry about, let me know here. 40 comments so far. So open question of the table. Were you aware of this, first of all?
Yes.
And
is the new Scrum Guide planned? No.
And what are your thoughts on the next version of the Scrum Guide?
Did the ghost pepper chip kill my my tongue?
Maybe.
So now this one isn't hot. It's like
isn't bad.
Like something happened. Like it numbed my tongue, and I'm not.
Yeah,
tasting
maybe
it.
The ghost pepper.
Like it feels like my tongue's numb because I'm only tasting a little bit of tomato, and that's it.
Yeah,
I got a little bit more kick to it, but
I'm curious.
The other chips were way worse.
Yeah.
I'm curious what some of the so I knew about the blog post. I haven't read any of the comments yet. Are there
Let me
any...
scan them and see. I before podcast. I even look at them, I'm going to tell you that my guess is of the 40, about half of them are going to be arguing semantics and
of course
Scrum's to this, Scrum's not enough this, okay, whatever. But okay. But let me look. Maybe I'm wrong. I would love to be wrong.
By the way, I expected this podcast to go south a lot more.
Yeah.
You mean like more swearing or like
that would hurt?
We're pretty south.
More.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like the expected spiciness.
Yeah,
it's not too bad. Sorry,
I don't know what
audience. Yeah, let's go for another one of these.
Yeah. What were we fearing, really? Because
I'm now getting the Carolina Reaper on the tongue.
Yeah, on the tongue. Yeah, it's a bit.
I didn't get anything.
I did also burn my tongue on coffee this morning.
Oh,
so you got to let it tongue anyway. You cheated!
You numbed your tongue first.
It was just the tip.
Oh, shots fired. Just the tip. Yeah, if I had to sum up Sunder's visit in one phrase, it would be, that's what she said.
It is what she said.
I am yet to touch my milk. I'm not.
Yeah. All right, so the comments I'm scanning, there's a lot of really good suggestions. Some things that have came up have been the time box should be eliminated. Refinement of the artifacts.
In what way?
The concept of artifacts in Scrum is fundamental, but more examples or clarifications how they can be managed and refined might be beneficial. Darcy asks a question that I really like, which is, what's meant by true leader? Because the Scrum Guide has evolved on the stance of a Scrum Master from servant leader, true leader.
I'm going to sum that up to not false.
To what?
Not false.
True.
A true leader. Not false.
Not fake.
Yeah.
Genuine.
This is, again, it depends on the situation. Like, where do you want to go? What do you want to lead? Yeah. To what degree? Yeah. There are so many hooks to that.
Well, to me, whenever anybody asks me this, and they're like, Jim, what do you think about this? Like, I'm a Scrum Master, but I am not a leader. And I said, well, what's your definition of leadership? And the most common answer I get is people management. And I'm like, well, notice it doesn't say manager at all.
I already did too.
So, leader versus manager, I think, is really at the root of servant leader, true leader, whatever the hell we want to talk about. None of those things say backlog manager or
leader,
people manager.
Right. Leader is title agnostic, right?
Like, I kind of, my gut feeling kind of goes towards multiple applications of this, where as a Scrum Master, sometimes I'm a coach, right? Giving a good speech at halftime, trying to re-rally the troops in the middle of the sprint, saying, you know, I know that we've had some difficulties over the last weekend or whatnot, but we really need to try to, you know, still hit this sprint goal, even if it feels impossible, but let's try our best. Let's make sure the PO knows that these issues have arisen, but let's make sure that we can keep going. Or is it a leader where you got to be silent and let them work out the problem on their own? Or, you know, there's multiple different ways that you can show that you are a leader and, you know, even just supporting your team and hearing them with their frustrations and vent, even if you can't fix something because it's just unfixable at the moment, as in a hierarchy situation at the company or just the way that it's structured, or you're in the middle of a transition, you're there at least to hear them.
Would you say that in the context of Scrum and the whole transition from, I don't know, where you want to go, that the Scrum Master would be the leader of leaders in the sense of Scrum?
I think I would just say no.
All right.
I think they're the enabler. They're the this might be, I'm hesitant to say this, but I think of a Scrum team as an engine, and I think of a Scrum Master as maybe the oil, a lubricant. They're making other things more efficient, more effective, more sustainable.
That is what she said.
Without
less friction.
With too much friction, heat builds up. Heat could be conflict. Like, there's, you know, again, all analogies break down. But I don't say I would call them a leader of leaders. I would say that leadership is not nearly as big or scary as people make it out to be. Everybody can be a leader every day. There's a video I recommend to a lot of people about called Lollipop Leadership. And it's a very quick TED Talk about how the act of giving somebody a lollipop made them a leader and made an impact on somebody. So I think if leader is synonymous with manager, that's the first problem. And then if too many people put the idea of leadership on a pedestal, that is also a problem.
Yeah.
By the way, my tongue is now pretty much on fire.
Yeah.
More the front side.
Yeah.
I am 100% not feeling it.
Well,
I took another one of those.
I tried two of those and they don't.
No, me too.
Like they're spice.
So there's two other ideas in the comments.
The front palate. Mm-hmm. That's it. Yeah.
So my buddy Martin, I think it's Ham, right? H-A-M in the Netherlands.
Martin Ham.
Good. I haven't seen him for a while, but really enjoyed our time together. He says one of the things that frustrated him is the lack of a definition of an impediment.
Yeah.
And he goes on to explain, but.
Mm-hmm. But that's also so contextual.
How so? I agree, but how so?
I mean, if you want to define what it is, I mean, I think it could maybe the effects of an impediment could be better defined. Like, an impediment is an impediment if the team cannot resolve it themselves.
Impediment anything that slows down the flow of value?
Yeah. So I guess he's not asking for more specificity, is more asking like just for that kind of definition that
I think about. Well, if I scan there, I think he wants a definition or more specificity around an impediment. And to make matters worse, I think if you polled your average 20 agile coaches, PSTs, agile consultants, you know, people from all different backgrounds about an impediment, you'd get many, many different answers. Mm-hmm. Define impediments and blockers differently. But I also don't care if somebody defines them the same. I just talk about impact, blast radius, and what actions are we going to take, who's going to take those actions, et cetera.
Yeah, we do the same on our teams. We have an impediment, but we also have blockers. Blockers are hard stops.
Yeah.
It's that red stop sign, whereas an impediment is, it's like a yellow because you're still making progress, but you aren't making the progress at the same speed that you were previously. Maybe you're having to reach out to get help to clear some batching or something, where you have to talk to someone and get their answer. Or, you know, if you're working with a shipping company, you have to make sure that that shipping company is going to show up to your distribution center and take packages that you want, you know, delivered to your individual customers. So, but if you're not hearing back from them, they're an impediment because they're still going to get back to you. It's just how long is it going to take?
But during COVID, they were blockers.
Yes. During COVID, they definitely became blockers.
Yeah. I mean, to me, the biggest definition that I give my clients. And again, clients are different than students, right? So when we're in the realm of a classroom, I am pretty clear on a definition. But in practice, blockers are hard stops, impediments could be slowdowns, and exactly. Our reaction to them is different. Mm-hmm. Another one from the comments, if we want one last one, and this one, I'll be honest, we could maybe do an entire episode on this. Is Thomas suggests minimum of one increment per sprint, because as it now, many think one increment is the goal and then Scrum becomes too rigid for them. Now, this idea of how many increments are there in a sprint, what's the relationship of releases to increments and all this, this is a constant debate.
Yeah.
Where do you come down on this?
I hear the D word coming.
I'm really trying hard not to.
Come on, you're going to owe me like a dinner by the end if you keep saying it to Ben.
I will happily wine and dine you, dude.
Okay. Well, oh, wow, you're not my type. No offense, but you're not my type.
But that's the same discussion that gets fed into that technically the moment that we that any given product backlog item meets the definition of done, you have an increment. Technically. But then what you say, like that's where I usually end up in a discussion. Like, so if I finish just one product backlog item, I technically have fulfilled an increment so I can drop work. No. But yeah, you have fulfilled the increment that has been created. Is it valuable? Like, I don't know.
Feels like a loophole to be lazy.
Yeah,
and not push yourself and into growth. Or and if yes, maybe you don't have something on your backlog that you can actively pick up. Then what can you learn and bring to the team then at that moment? If you have seven more days in your sprint, learn something and bring it back to the team.
Yeah, but then that is where coming back to that question, it's really difficult to give a solid answer to this if they're continuously trying to anyone who's trying to be lazy, try to find a loophole to do as little as possible, little effort as possible. I am 100% in favor of doing as minimum work as possible with the goal to reach maximum value, and just trying not to do shit for the sake of not doing shit is not that.
Yeah, and it brings us back to that question a couple questions ago that Jim had is, what do we do with the person that might not be a good fit on the team? Is that someone that's a not good fit then? If you notice every sprint that they're doing the bare minimum to support the team and the product, how do you handle that then? Yeah. Like is that a white flag of just, you know, they're kind of saying I'm done and I need to move on to something that's actually challenging and something that they want to support?
Could be.
Yeah. And I mean, like over Sunder's shoulder is one of my raised beds. And if I think about a weekend, if I weed that, let's say I have a PBI that says remove all the weeds from that garden bed. Yeah, it's done. That increment is still usable. It's valuable. It's in better condition than I left it. I could argue I made it more valuable. If I plant a few new things in there, more PBIs maybe, it's incrementally better. That goes on all weekend. But whatever state that garden bed is at the end of Sunday when I take off my gardening gloves and walk in the house to watch Netflix, I still have one increment. So I think by definition, I still have one increment, but I might have added to it, you know, additive, iterative, incremental, many, many times. Or maybe the whole thing I did all weekend was to put one big thing in there. Maybe it was to just plant all my tomato plants. Well, that's one thing, and it's still just one increment.
What if you have multiple increments that all meet the definition of done, and you combine them? Do you have...
Is it usable?
But they're all individually done. Mm-hmm. They're all individually usable. Okay. But they're also combined. Do you have multiple increments or do you have one increment at the end?
Does it matter?
For the loophole person that's seeking the loophole, they want to know how little they can do.
For the agile tinfoil hat people.
But see, I don't see teams trying to use these semantics to game the system like Serena's suggesting. I see it as, and Thomas says this in his thing, like it could be too rigid for teams. I see the opposite. The idea of one increment is very approachable to them. The idea of many seems difficult. So I would kind of answer it the same way he does, which is, does it matter? Or the way you did, which is, does it matter? But I would say it's both. It is many things and it is one. The one is when we snap the line, in my vernacular, at the end of the sprint. But if at any point you had asked me before the end of that time box, I'd say, yeah, we have many. Like, our single increment is made up of many pieces of work. And any one of, we had stopped at any one point, my answer would not have changed.
I guess for the team morale, do you feel better when playing tug of war, when you get one person's toe over the line and say you're a winner, or when you get that whole other side of that team in the mud in the middle?
Then I'm going to refer to a philosopher of the early 2000s. It doesn't matter if you win by a mile or by a meter. Win is a win. Dominic Toretto, Fast and Furious.
Nice. You just quoted Fast and Furious. I was like, who is this leader you're talking about? Dom Toretto.
The thing I always heard growing up was close enough for horseshoes and hand grenades.
I use that today with a team. They're like, and basically the quote was, and Brandon, if you're listening, kudos. The team's doing a great job. Even if the team doesn't hit the sprint goal, they're very close, and it was an ambitious sprint goal and very, very valuable. Like, no one questions the valuable aspect of the scrum, of the increment. But I said horseshoes and hand grenades. Like, I want to be clear, and I'm going to tell the team this is going as a red X against did we meet the sprint goal, but that doesn't mean it's bad.
Yeah.
The Yankees still lost 60 games in their best seasons. It's okay. But if you think about, in American sports, baseball, football, right? Mm. You look at a scoreboard, you've got the final score, but then you've got all nine innings. That's kind of what we're talking about, right? Like, if the game ends in the sixth inning, how many increments did you have? Well, you had six innings of a score. You can look at it on the board, but you still have a final score. So I think, but if we assume that a time box or a game in this example is going to go until completion, you're going to have one. At the end of the game, you have one final score. Win or lose, black and white, binary. But any step along the way, and in some cases, games do get called early, that's your increment. Those are your steps toward. I don't know if that's a good analogy, but it's kind of how my brain thinks about it.
I mean, it just also, you don't want to not hit your goal every single time. Every team needs a win.
Yeah.
At some point, you need to win. Otherwise, you're going to have people throwing their hands up and saying, I don't believe that this framework is working, or it'll burn them out.
Hey, I'm wearing a hat for the lovable losers, and you know, but even they won a lot of games, and it's hard to be a fan and to be motivated when you're on a team that doesn't win very often.
No, agree.
When you can see that line, that cutoff line right there.
But if you're continuously losing, then you're not using the events of the framework properly as what they're intended for.
Yeah.
You should have a different.
You should be adjusting.
Yeah. Speaking of adjusting, we're almost an hour and a half in.
Yep, I was just going to wrap us up, but here's what I'd like to do. Let's go around the table and let's give our listeners one takeaway, whether it's something you recommend they listen to, watch, learn, read, do, give them, or even a motivational statement.
Sure. My key takeaway out of this podcast is that the labels on these food items are all bullshit.
Yep. Whoever made this scale... Yep, Scoville, we're not quite liking you right now.
No.
Well, they're relative estimation.
Yeah. Right?
They do have boundaries. I mean, some are quite large, like 2,500 to 10,000.
Sure, and if you're going to lick all the dust off these chips, then you're probably going to die. But I expect it to be dead by now.
Yeah.
So that's my biggest takeaway out of this episode.
I think the biggest thing that I would have is I'm really enjoying the I'm almost done with it. The book by called On Creativity by Rick Rubin. I highly suggest it. And Sense and Respond, Jeff. How do I pronounce
Jeff Gothelf.
Gothelf and Josh Seiden. We're going to have them on in a couple weeks.
Just Jeff.
But Sense and Respond is just a book that I absolutely love. Keep coming back to it. Can't recommend it enough.
My biggest recommendation is to get grippos in your life. I'm a little, you know, on that other side though, that my husband finally tasted them and loves them. So now we're going to have to fight for them during TV time, but I'm glad that he likes them.
Yeah. I guess
She's gonna plug her class.
I am not actually. No, I was thinking about it, but no, I would say consider viability more in your lives when you're thinking about like what's coming next, and is it worth it? Is it valuable? And just consider it a little bit. It's a little bit of a different lens than the truth curve. There's a little bit more dimensionality to it, but if you overlap the two.
So let's wrap up the same way we did with the last guest. Hmm. Without knowing who the next guest is going to be, give him a question that you would like us to ask him. And it could be anything.
This is the hardest part of the whole podcast.
Yeah. This could be him, could be her. I don't know who the next guest is going to be by heart. We'll see. But give us a question. Could be related to Agile, could be solving life's answers, life's questions.
It's kind of like a version of Ask the Curmudgeon.
Yeah, that's what I actually was starting to think of. What's an example in your life that you have used your own advice and failed?
Ooh, love it. Oh, Sabrina.
Can I plus one that one?
Yeah, sure.
Sure, go ahead. Sandra, what's your answer to it?
This is a good question. I don't know. Like on the spot. That's something that I will have to think about and answer in the next episode.
Mine, for whoever this mystery guest is how would you help somebody who is struggling to define a product, define their product? Mm-hmm. Be as specific as possible.
I thought you mentioned to answer her question.
No.
All right. And then I'm still going to come back.
Okay.
What did you want to be when you grew up?
There you go.
When you were six.
How close are you to your envisionment of when you were 10?
I love hearing that about you.
I did it again, didn't I?
Mm-hmm. Okay, listeners, envisionment is not a word. She owes me $2.
Yeah, but you did it earlier. With your eye shot.
All right, bring us out of here, Sandra.
That is all for today. Thank you for listening. If you liked this episode, let us know by hitting that like button. Share it with friends and colleagues, sharing a message on LinkedIn, joining our warm and welcoming Discord community, or attend recordings as a virtual audience. You can find all the relevant links in the show notes. We hope you'll tune back in for the next episode of the Mastering Agility Podcast.